We'll say we're wrapping this up. You've come to the end of Vancouver, right? Broadcasting from 101.9 FM, unceded Musqueam territory. You can find us on iTunes, Vancouver, Comrade, question mark. But you know what? We got a little bonus content for you here. So we're going to keep going. What's the recent...
Let's see here.
Wait, did he have an energy drink? Did you just scroll past the Steven Seagal energy drink?
Steven Seagal's lightning bolt energy drink.
It's not working for him because he is lazy.
Wow. Have you ever wanted to punch through someone's skull?
Yeah.
Lightning bolt.
Yes, I have. Where can I get this?
He said in interviews that he's God.
Yeah, I believe it. I think he is. Because no one takes him seriously and everyone's just like, oh, shut up. And he's like, come on.
Why are you on Wikipedia for recent? Go to IMDb.
There's a giant filmography here.
Oh, no, sorry. Dumbo.
Against the Dark, Driven to Kill,
Force of Execution,
Absolution. That's
Maximum
what I watched.
Maximum Conviction.
Well, there's been four movies since Absolution.
Oh my
god, churning them out. Look at that. He had three movies in 2015.
What is this credit too? It's an actor credit too. It's not even a. He's no other part in it other than people are just hiring him.
Yeah.
So Tubi announced The Asian Collection, 2016, End of a Gun, 2015. Killing Salazar.
These
2015
ones,
Code of Honor.
Those are in post-production too, so
those are basically being edited.
Yeah.
Oh man, he's a machine. This is incredible.
Yeah, they're just turning them out, and it's so much fun because that watching these movies, like they're messy. Like there was one scene in that movie where they needed to do a dolly shot.
Yeah,
and you could tell that they went past the mark and had to fix it and go back a little bit. So you're just finding all the little, and it's just stereotypes and stock characters and Steven Seagal going
the most base plot.
I don't do that anymore. And then
you go,
I think you know what? I think he's probably going to do that anymore.
Yeah. Does he come out of retirement for every single movie?
What do we got here? I mean, we'd be lucky enough to have a little Absolution trailer.
I think so. We can do that.
Excellent.
After Hours here. Let's do this.
After Hours. Yeah.
Oh, skyline, stock footage. I'll go back. We don't want to miss that. We don't want to miss that line. Sorry, I should.
Yeah.
Forgive me for talking over that.
No, please. Here we go. Rated R, of course.
I've been a very bad man most of my life.
Oh. Oh no! He has a mustache.
How can he not take him seriously? Oh, he looks awful.
There's a lot of dark lighting here. Ooh.
I decided I want to do one good thing in my life.
Oh man, he's giving
Even
such a.
If I die in the process.
Please tell me he talks like that the entire movie.
It's such a passionate read.
All of a sudden, got jumped in a bar. She belongs to me.
You can run, but I'm gonna catch
I want to say, by the way, this is Christopher Nolan's Batman movies legacies. Our movie trailers like this.
The Bwong.
Mr. Wayne.
Yeah.
They're coming.
Okay, let's let the man talk. Listen to him.
Oh, he's so pudgy.
He belongs to me.
You can run, but I'm going to catch you.
I want to find this guy.
They will kill you.
I'll make him disappear.
One more mission.
Oh, they even got this guy.
He's tight.
Last chance.
Yeah, they're here.
One final
one
fight.
One final fight.
They
just did a walking away.
I have a little problem with that.
Oh no, it's not just a mustache. That's a full beard.
It's a goatee.
That's a fake beard. Steven Seagal can't grow hair on his face.
Steven Seagal.
Oh, it's a goatee, you're right.
Anthony Jones. Oh, look at all the punching.
Absolution.
Oh, that looks great.
I'm a little upset.
Isn't that kind of...
We got a little post.
It's not two against one here, John. It's two against us.
You're hanging around with the wrong people.
Some great audio editing.
Oh, more exploding.
I love these movies because you can just see...
Oh, man, that's amazing.
The influence from other good movies.
Yeah.
They wanted to make an action movie.
Yeah.
They hired Steven Seagal. They knew that you can't just have him, so they gave him a higher energy, in-shape partner.
Yeah.
You mean the little... his little sidekick.
And, and then, you know, he does his Aikido thing. But you can see that the Aikido or Aikido?
Aikido.
Aikido. Aikido.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't punch in that, though.
But, right. I think they might have a little. Anyway, but they've.
They use
you can,
it.
You can see the influence. Like, this has got the British bad guy. So they've got, like, the snatch, lock, stock kind of, like.
Vinny Jones.
I'm gonna go find him.
I like Vinny Jones a lot.
And,
like, I think he's pretty.
A Taken style human smuggler kind of thing.
Yeah, that's so Taken.
Yeah.
The whole, like, the sex trade, CD. Yeah, and they've got like a torture room. It's like the hostel. They combine kind of hostel and
it's all Taken. It's all these movies that Steven Seagal really wanted to be cast in, and nobody wanted him. So he's like, I'm going to make my own movie.
Exactly. I don't doubt that he's funding all these movies.
Oh, absolutely. Like, who else would?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm sure they make money though, because they're probably not too expensive, because they just go film them in Eastern Europe.
Yeah,
and then.
What's the name of that movie studio that makes like Sharknado and Piranha Monster?
Sci-Fi makes those movies.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sci-Fi. But what about the all the like giant piranha octopus and?
Is that Sci-Fi too?
It's got a different name. But
Sharktopus.
Yeah, there is. There. Yep. I'm not even.
Yeah, you don't remember Sharktopus?
Yeah, but
of course I just said Sharktopus.
Okay, good.
But they manage to make movies that are awful and ridiculous, and people just like it because it's... Because
awful movies are great.
Yeah. No, they're not. I don't understand why people watch these movies. I've tried getting into, like, Sharktopus. God, is that ridiculous.
Yeah, to be fair, I've never watched one of them from beginning to end.
And it's like, no, it's sci-fi. It's just horrible.
Is it sci-fi?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is sci-fi.
I thought they were... Anyways. Yeah. But those are movies that people like to... You know, it's like you're watching it in a dorm room with your friends and making fun of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's these movies aren't.
Yeah.
And I don't. Obviously, Steven Seagal's not making his movies with that in mind.
I don't
But that's what people are doing.
I don't like making fun of stuff where they know they're like people in Sharktopus.
Well,
are
Sharknado
just
for sure.
Having fun, yeah. Sharknado. I like making fun of people that think they're great.
Which is why we love Steven Seagal movies.
That's That is a key difference.
Although Steven Seagal. There's nobody else quite like Steven Seagal. I mean, he's achieved, he's become someone.
Yeah.
He has. He's very successful, for sure. He's got a ridiculous rap sheet.
Although I want to say they could have spent a little more money on the goatee budget. It looked like
it was falling off.
It looked like black speaker foam, you know, that he had taped around his mouth. It looked awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the padding they put to soundproof rooms.
Yeah.
If only it could have... Soundproof those horrible lines.
Yeah. The super whispery voice.
Let's watch another. I'm liking this Steven Seagal stuff.
I bet you it's trailers are exactly
what's
the same.
Let me give you some names.
Okay.
Maximum Conviction. Force of Execution. He produced that one.
Let's see Force of Execution because I've seen Maximum. That's one where they get locked in the jail.
You're a big Steven Seagal fan.
I love him. I love his early stuff too.
Ooh,
and you know what?
Here we go. We're going
Our next CITR show coming down. Community Living show is coming up. So this will be the last thing we do. But what a last thing to do. Checking out Steven Seagal trailer for, what is it?
Force of Execution.
Force of Execution. That's a strong title.
We'll play ourselves out with some Steven Seagal.
All right. So you can check us out, 604podcast@gmail.com. We're here every Thursday, 8 a.m. We'll be back. Here's a little...
It's a gall action for you.
Before your time, some misguided fools wanted my business, but didn't have the skill that we have. Bitches!
Someone attacked your chop shop.
Oh, you bitches!
I know what you're thinking. Ice Man, war, this ain't good for nobody.
You can call me Ice, Mr. Alexander.
Mr. Alexander, his days are numbered.
Yo, can I help you?
Mr. Alexander doesn't do business like this.
I'm only going to say it once. I handle distribution. You sell everything to me.
Who's that dude?
I don't know. It's not with us.
You like games?
No, sir.
Well, I think I got a game that you're going to like.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
right now. But you need to let it in.
Patrick Shen's film, In Pursuit of Silence, extrapolates along philosophical and spiritual lines to offer a quietly nuanced portrait of our relationship with silence. Meditative cinematography and a minimal piano score complements interviews with scholars, physicians, and inventors as they discuss how silence is an integral and necessary part of being fully human. In Pursuit of Silence screens at Doxa on May 7th and 11th. See doxafestival.ca, doxafestival.ca, for more details.
Do you like Friends? Well, we like you, so become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gives you all kinds of deals with our friends on Main Street, including 10% off at Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Red Cat Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
It's two stations away from Tweddestrom. I wanna go the colors around the harbor bridge to start. I never want to be the
Good morning and welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Networks and here live at CITR 101.9 FM. So Kelly is away again and I'm here, Michael Rubin. And since we didn't have a guest or anything really prepared, I am actually going to do a repeat show that we did with an interview that in conversation I had with Teresa de Groba. She wrote the book about mass influence and how to influence people, and you know how to become an influencer yourself. So we'll just cut into that for right now, and maybe I'll have a gripe about TransLink later on after the sun run. So let's go to Teresa.
And welcome to the Community Living Radio on the NCRA Networks. And we're here today with Teresa de Groba, and Teresa teaches business and marketing courses and heads an international evolutionary business council. That's tough to say. She works with speakers, influencers dedicated to teaching principles of success. Teresa believes it is possible to create a massive positive change in the thinking of our planet, one word of mouth epidemic at a time. I have to agree with you on the one word of mouth epidemic. That's pretty awesome. That's quite the undertaking that, you have going on with that. So with that mouthful, is there anything else that you want to add to that, Teresa? And welcome to the
no,
show.
Just that it's great to be here, Michael. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure to have somebody who wants to inspire people the way that you actually do.
Thank you.
So you've also often been described as someone who teaches thought leaders and emerging thought leaders to a greater impact on the world. So tell me how you got to that.
Oh, I love that question. You know, like a lot of people, it was a bit messy, is what I want to say. You know, I had what I would now affectionately call a really bad year about 12, 13 years ago. And, you know, in the first 6 months of that year, I had my marriage had ended, my father had passed away, my business had failed, and my health was in a spiral. And I actually, you know, remember at the time, the only thing I was really, really clear on was how incredibly unhappy I was. And in fact, if I look back over the, you know, preceding 25 years of my life, I couldn't actually look back at a time and say that I could point to that I was really on fire happy. You know, I had all the outward trappings of success, great job, six-figure income, beautiful house, nice car. But it just, what, you know, my life wasn't really lighting me up, you know. And I actually remember there was a moment when I'm sitting on the bathroom floor of my post-marriage breakup new condo, you know, and I'm surrounded by tools because I've always been a renovator. And this bathroom's going to be my latest project. And there's literally tears streaming down my face because, you know, the only thought in my head is that it's me that needs renovating. It's me. And it was one of those amazing moments because I made the commitment right then, right there, I'm going to be my next project. And I started doing every self-help course under the sun. I went back and did a whole certificate in mediation because I've always been a conflict avoider. Mm-hmm. And I just started leaning in to changing my life until I really figured out what really does light me up is actually teaching what I'm really good at, go figure, and helping others that would change the world become more influential.
Wow. So how long did it take you to actually get around all that, especially knowing you got to renovate yourself or coming to the realization that you need to renovate yourself?
You know, I love that because a lot of people think it's, you know, poof and it's done. and although life can be magic, it's, you know, the magic isn't always instantaneous, you know. And I had been introduced to the whole concept that a lot of transformational leaders talk about, which is like lean in. You know, Janet Atwood talks about this in her book, The Passion Test, just lean in the direction of things you love. So when I first really stepped into the realm of, you know, and now for something completely different, I decided that I was going to create a charity to build schools in Africa. I was going to take my hobby of writing children's books and publish three of them to raise money for the charity. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that happened when I did that was, you know, I really quickly learned two things. The first was that I didn't really like being a children's author. Go figure, right? And the second was that, you know, I had people coming at me in droves saying, three bestsellers in 8 months. Holy cow, Teresa, how did you do that? And I ended up, you know, I started mentoring all these people and, you know, how do you get more influence and more reach? You know, until one day I had, you know, my very dear friend, who's actually now my best friend, Shawn DePerrin, she's also an international level speaker. You know, she was sitting having tea with me one day and she said, you know, Teresa, you know that fish don't know what water is. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I get that cliche. You know, a lot of us don't get what we're really good at and what's all around us. She says, the universe is sending you a flood of people who want your help. Don't you think you should pay attention to that? And it was like a light bulb moment, because it was like, here was the business that I should be creating, teaching people who want to do good work in the world how to become more influential. Mm-hmm. And it was so intuitive and so natural and normal to me that I, you know, like fish don't get the water is, I wasn't seeing where my gifts lay. And when I shifted and rebranded overnight, all of a sudden, you know, my life really lit on fire and my business just took off and I've never looked back.
So your success was like a light bulb coming on?
A little bit, yeah. And, yeah. You know, success is sloppy, you know, and I think one of the most important things anyone can learn in life is to give yourself permission to succeed sloppily. You know, if we wait till everything lines up all neat and perfect and looks pretty with a bow tied on top of it, we'll never really do anything. And in fact, it's in those getting messy moments and trying stuff, even though it might fail or even though it might be a little awkward in how you bring it forward. Mm-hmm. It's those moments that are actually the really joyful, wonderful, amazing moments of life.
Well, don't you have time after you know, you realize what it is that you have, what the talents are, and how the talents can be used to help bring value to the world? Can't you clean it up after you discovered it?
Exactly.
even you after know, all like, the mess?
You know, you want to build a house, there's going to be a little sawdust involved, right?
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be a mansion at the end of that process, right? And so, you know, I just think so many of us are hardwired to resist stuff until we feel really ready to do it, or until we feel, you know, the world is waiting. Really, truthfully, the number one thing that stops most people from becoming more influential is their inner dialogue, that they're not worthy, they're not ready, they're not smart enough, they're not influential enough, they don't have enough credentials. Inner dialogue will trip you up every time. And, you know, transformational leaders all over the world are talking about this. I know you talk about this on your show a lot, Michael.
Yes.
And often what's stopping you from really making a difference and being of service in the world is that inner dialogue that you're hardwired with. That's one of the reasons I wrote my book, was because I wanted good people to see that sometimes you're your own worst enemy, and you could be of much higher service to the world.
Yeah.
If you would just stop listening to all your negative inner dialogue.
So when you talk about your book, you mean the one that's coming out October 1st?
Yes.
Mass Influence?
Yeah. Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential.
Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, you know, I really wrote this book because I see so many good people who really want to do wonderful, positive things in the world get tripped up the minute that they try and increase their own influence, you know. And when you look at highly influential people, it really is a lot like a game, you know. It's really a skill set, a set of habits that you can learn that will really serve you. But the challenge is that most of us have, you know, well, we have two things that stop us from becoming more influential. The first thing that stops us is we all learned an etiquette or a rule book in kindergarten about fairness and, you know, I do this for you, you do that for me. And, you know, we learned a similar rule book when we first started networking in business. You know, you're my colleague. I want to do business with you, therefore I would offer to buy you a coffee, for example. And right. You know, we all know intuitively, you know, that if you met Oprah Winfrey and offered to buy her a coffee, her gatekeepers would get in the way faster than you could say restraining order, right? And yet most of us don't get where that rule book changed.
Okay, we're going to break it there for a break. Here we go.
Support for CITR comes from Golden Voiced, welcoming Icelandic trio Sigurós on their 2016 North American tour on Sunday, September 18th at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre. Sigurós tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.ca.
I'm gonna miss you.
Better Environmentally Sound Transportation is bringing you the 20th Annual Commuter Challenge. The Commuter Challenge is a fun, friendly competition between individuals, workplaces, organizations, and students. Participants take transit, rideshare, car share, walk, cycle, or work from home. By tracking commutes online, participants see their total number of CO2 emissions avoided, fuel saved, and calories burned. There's absolutely no cost to register and participate, and you can win great prizes. The event takes place June 5th to 11th, the week after Bike to Work Week. We encourage people to do both. Our goal is to encourage healthy, safe, and green communities along the coast and across BC by promoting sustainable commutes. Register now at commuterchallengebc.ca. This Daffodil Month, add a spring to your step with the Canadian Cancer Society's Daffodil Dash on April 24th, a run to raise funds for cancer research and prevention, as well as support for people living with the disease right now. Run solo, bring the family, or team up with your friends and colleagues, because every step you take, every dollar you raise, continues the life-saving work of the Canadian Cancer Society. Register today at cancer.ca/daffodil-dash.
Highly influential operate with a different set of habits and etiquette in their life. And so that's the first thing that stops a lot of good people from gaining more influence. The second thing is that a lot of us are really hardwired with a lot of negative self-talk that that really gets in our way of stepping into the influence game.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of people are, just our society in general is like, they are them and we are us. And there's like a railroad track that you can't cross, right?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, because it's, you know, a lot of people really do think that way. And, you know, the reality is when good people stop themselves from seeking influence because they've got all this inner dialogue going on, you know, the only people who aren't hardwired with inner dialogue that stops them from wanting to seek influence is sociopaths. You know, sociopaths are often hardwired to want more influence. And, you know, that's not the world I want my grandkids to grow up in. I don't want my grandkids growing up in a world run by sociopaths. I want good people with strong values who really believe in changing the world for the good to be seeking influence and having the ability to create that change, because really that's the world we all want to live in.
Right. So is that the basic why to creating a book about this topic?
You know, I think it was one of my most fundamental whys, you know, because a lot of people don't realize how much they can step into thought leadership, you know, and I mean, you know, a lot of people are batting around this term thought leadership, but, you know, if you're pushing out new ideas and new thinking or wanting to initiate change in some way, then you are in the realm of thought leadership, right? And that, it can be a scary place to be, because the minute that you're leading, nobody else tells you the way to go, right? You're the one that's got to make it up and figure it out. And, you know, so thought leaders, and, you know, most business owners fall into this realm, but a lot of people in business do as well. You know, you might just wanting to be creating positive change in your organization or your community, or maybe you run a not-for-profit. And if you are not feeling that you have the right to step forward and create positive change, if you're feeling no one will take you seriously, if you're feeling you don't have enough credentials, if you're, you know, any form of inner dialogue. And, you know, the great irony is we all invented it when we were very young. You know, I can, you know, there's a lot of research in the psychology and sociology literature on this, right? Most people invent their dominant inner dialogue when they're like 2-3 years old, first getting language. And, you know, it's those first few failures you had in life, right? Mm-hmm. I can actually remember the day I first invented my inner dialogue. And you know, and really clear how it trips me up now as an adult.
Well, because I run into this all the time, where that first inner dialogue wasn't necessarily from within; it was something that was handed to you.
Oh, exactly.
Was yours handed to you, or did you discover it on your own?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because it's sort of like it's handed to you, and then at the same time, it's what did you make that mean, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, like what you wouldn't know about me if you didn't ask is, you know, I'm from the Canadian equivalent of the backwoods, right? Like I, you know, I'm not only Canadian, but I grew up in the north, right? And, you know, my family used to spend their summers in a remote backwoods cabin. We'd, you know, we'd go in every year just in time to see the little baby mosquitoes hatching. And, you know, and so one fall we're back from the cabin and, you know, I'm the youngest of nine. So all my eight siblings are sitting around the kitchen in our tiny little, you know, we have a 100-year-old house and all my cousins are visiting and everybody's buzzing with excitement. Because my grandmother's taken us all to the movies, which is a big freaking deal because, well, first of all, it's the love bug. So that's a pretty big deal right there. And, you know, secondly, we never go to the movies. It's just way too much hassle for a family our size. And I look across the room just in time to hear my mother say, Teresa can't go. She's too little. And so I make that mean. I'm too small to play with the big kids. And that inner dialogue sticks. So I, you know, as of that point, I start spending all my time doing one of two things, either desperately trying to prove that I'm not too small to play with the big kids or terrified that I am. Now, do you think that might get in the way as an international speaker who's got to step out on a stage in front of 500 or 1,000 people, right? And the reality is, though, that, you know, your inner dialogue is neither good nor bad. It just motivates you, right? Mm-hmm. It can trip you up, but it also can motivate you to do some really cool things in life. I'm too small to play with the big kids actually motivated me to become an expert on influence that wants to invest in emerging thought leaders. How cool is that, right? Right. So, you know, a really great exercise, if you don't mind me giving your listeners a takeaway, if you want a takeaway from the call.
Oh, takeaways are awesome. I actually encourage them.
Okay, great. Well, here's your first takeaway. I'm giving you guys homework. For the next week, journal what you notice about your dominant inner dialogue, especially when you think about doing something that to you would have a lot of importance to it. Like if you think about really stepping out and playing a bigger game in life, maybe you change something within your organization, or maybe you, you know, set up that not-for-profit organization you've always been thinking about. What's that inner dialogue that confronts you? And start journaling about that, because that was invented by a very young version of you. And when you can really start to see where that hinders you, but also where it helps you, then you can come to peace with that inner dialogue and have it stop running the show. It then just becomes, you know, a messaging that runs in the background, but you don't need to actually engage in it or be motivated by it anymore.
So the topic of the book, why do you think that this particular topic is so important now?
Oh, I love that question. Well, and I know I'm preaching to the converted when I talk to the, you know, people and that are listening on your show. But, you know, I really do believe that we're living at a point in history that we will look back on as the most significant shift in humanity that mankind has ever seen, which is we are in the era right now where people are waking up and they're realizing that they can control their own lives, they can control their own destiny by learning to notice and control their own thoughts. How cool is that, right? And when we get that very simple skill to notice how we think, notice what we make things mean, and not let our thoughts run the show, but we start running our thoughts instead of our thoughts start running us, then all of a sudden, the world around us changes. We have the opportunity to pursue the life of our dreams. We have the opportunity to go after promotions or bigger opportunities or, you know, actually create positive change in the world. And so, you know, for me, this book is just one contribution, a small but important one, to really helping that shift happen on this planet, because this book invests in the average grassroots person who wants to create some positive change around them so that they really get how simple and easy it can be And, you know, by easy, I don't mean it wouldn't take work, but just like fish don't get what water is, most people don't get that influence is all around us. Learning to be influential really is as simple as riding a bike or as simple as learning to breathe. Once you get the basic habits of it, it really does become something that you will start to look at and wonder how you ever thought it was hard.
Yeah. And being an influencer does have it has a lot of its fun moments because it creates so much abundance around you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, influence, you know, there's just one fundamental principle to influence, and it's so easy that people laugh when I tell them, you know, and if you don't mind, I'll just give it to you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, just like we got to give respect to get respect, you got to give influence to get influence. And a lot of people kind of go, huh, what the heck does that mean? Right? But when you become someone who habitually starts giving influence to other people, and that's, you know, one of the most major habits of influential people that you'll see, is, you know, influence starts flowing back to you, right? You know, consider the scenario that if I was at a networking function and I stood up on a chair and said, look at me, I'm so great, I'm a four-time best-selling author, I speak all over the world, I even like pie, you know, people would be rolling their eyes back in their head and going, get that crazy Canadian out of here, you know? And at the same time, if I stood up on a chair and said, oh, everybody, Michael Rubin just came in the room. He has this awesome radio show and he's, you know, really a cause for positive change in the world. He, you know, shines a light on all these really cool people and highlights them on his show. And, you know, all of a sudden in that scenario, I'm gracious and you're more influential. And the interesting thing is in that act of giving influence, you know, I become more influential. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, it's got to be authentic. You know, because I can hear your listeners saying, you know, but what if you really don't like the person? Well, if you really don't like the person, don't say anything. But, you know, if you routinely go around and gift influence to people who in your mind deserve it, you know, like Michael, I would come on your show any day of the week. I love the work you do.
Thank you.
You know, it's very grassroots and it's, you know, it really does celebrate awesome people who are doing cool things in the world. You know, so for me, you know, I would clear my schedule to come on this show because I so love what you do. But, you know, there are interviews I turn down in a month just because I don't resonate with who the host is and what they're doing. And I want to be able to authentically be on their show and have fun with them and enjoy it, right? You know, so the first thing to understand around giving influence to get influence is that you always do it in alignment with who you are and what you believe. You never seek to build relationship or give influence to someone you don't authentically love and admire.
Yeah. There's one thing that I try to get through with a lot of people that is the idea of when you said alignment and values and things like that is getting people to understand what it is that they believe so that they align themselves with other people that have that belief so that everything is in alignment. And that's when things really start to light up is when everybody's authentic around each other and you kept bringing that authenticity up. So it becomes really important. Can you explain a little bit more why authenticity? Okay, we'll try that again. Authenticity is so important.
Okay, we'll get back to her answer on why authenticity is important. You're listening to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA networks and here live at CITR Radio 100.9 FM here in Vancouver at UBC. And we got a couple messages to play here. Okay.
Show your love for Discorder Magazine at our fundraiser at the ANSA Club on Saturday, April 23rd.
You've got one epic night planned with performances by Frog Eyes, Weird Candles, The Backhomes, Malcolm Jack, and Experience This, with special guest DJs and MCs to keep you dancing. There will also be a silent auction and a sale of exclusive back issues of Discorder magazine from the 1980s to now, with all proceeds supporting the publication and printing costs of your free independent Discorder magazine. Tickets are $10 for CITR members, $15 in advance on brownpapertickets.com, or $18 at the door. Head over to discorder.ca for all the information.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
They call me
DJ Ray.
The late night show is the start of the weekend. We play all sorts of drum and bass, D&B, jungle for the first part of the show. On the second part of the late night show, we play lots of ambient sounds or any irritating type of noise that goes bump in the night or any type of new age music that you hear on other stations. Only it's better here on CITR. Or any other case for that matter, if you're out and about and you want to hear something that is really groovy and stuff, then check out the late night show here on CITR 101.9 FM or streaming us online at CITR.ca. We broadcast right about after Friday night, Saturday mornings at 12:30 in the morning, just right after the Medicine Show hosted by Jason Lawrence. You can email me on request or any drum and bass you like to hear, or any local D&B if you are a drum and bass person that you want to share on the radio or on CITR. The email address is CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
Yeah, you know, and I love how you talk about this, Michael, because I couldn't agree more. It's authenticity is becoming such a common buzzword these days. Everybody's talking about it, and there's a lot of different definitions out there of it. Well, here's my definition. Authenticity is your inside voice saying the same thing as your outer voice, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if inwardly you're saying, oh God, I really need this sale, and outwardly you're saying, this is a really great product, you should buy it, you know, we all know that that lands smarmy. Right. And at the same time, when you're meeting influential people, you know, you can tell when someone runs up to an influential person and says, here's a copy of my book, I'd love for you to have it. When really what their insight is saying is, I really want you to endorse this. There's an inauthenticity there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so inside playing the influence game, you got to really get noticing where your inside voice is saying something different than your outside voice, because just like you can tell when other people aren't in alignment, they can tell when you're not, right?
Right.
And influence, or being in influential situations, connecting with influential people, has a tendency to make us nervous. You know, it presses those buttons where we get a little bit in our heads worrying about how we're coming across, or, you know, or maybe we've had that networking course that, you know, get out there and ask, always be closing, right? Maybe we've got that running in the back of our heads. And so people show up and do a lot of weird things when they meet influential people, and it creates an issue for authenticity. So you just want to make sure that you're watching what you're doing from a standpoint of, are you meeting people you really love? Are you doing something you really love? Are you, you know, asking when you shouldn't be asking, because there's a desperation going on that, you know, is running in the background. All of those things can create inauthenticities. And so it's really important to start noticing them.
Yeah. And you're right. You really can tell when somebody's just desperate to sell something, or if they're, again, authentically trying to just simply share value that they have. And sharing is way more important than I think selling. So a lot of good points on that. Yeah. So a lot of this is about building relationships. And you discuss with authenticity, you discussed one mistake that people make. How many other mistakes do, and what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when building relationships with influencers?
Yeah, I think the biggest I would see is the one I would affectionately call the premature ask, you know, and people always look at me and say, the premature what? But the premature ask is like the equivalent of, you know, you just meet the new neighbor and the new neighbor comes over and says, wow, I love that lawnmower you have out front. I can't wait to borrow that baby, right? And people do this to influencers all the time, right? Like you'll see it at big networking functions. You know, usually the most influential person in the room is the guest speaker or the person on stage mm-hmm. or the guest of honor. And you know, they might walk off stage and there'll be a lineup of a dozen or more people waiting to meet them. And half of them want to buy them a coffee or lunch. And, you know, three or four of them will have a book or a CD in hand wanting to give them a copy of their book or CD. And what you need to understand is like giving an influential person your book or your CD is a lot like saying to the brand new neighbor, you're going to love my kids. You're so going to enjoy babysitting them, right? It's right. premature. There's no relationship there, right? And so like we were talking about earlier, if you want to get influence, you give influence. If you want to build relationship with an influential person, offer them influence to kickstart the relationship. That's the equivalent of the apple pie when you're meeting a really influential person, right? So, you know, you might say something like, I heard you mention you're going to be talking in Cincinnati next month. You know, I happen to have a few LinkedIn connections on Cincinnati. Would you like me to send them information on your event? Or you might offer to write a book review for their book on Amazon, or maybe you could connect them with someone else who's influential. Maybe you know a reporter who might want to do a story on them. You know, maybe you know Michael Rubin and you could recommend them for his show, right?
Yes.
You know, there's all kinds of wonderful ways that you can offer to shine a light on someone else and give them influence. And I actually have another takeaway around this. Can I give your listeners another takeaway?
Again, we encourage takeaways.
You know, this one, I actually have this one is included with the book, Mass Influence. When you buy the book, we help you through this one in recorded modules. We have a free course that we give you with the book. But you can do this on your own if you like. And I call it the 30-day challenge. And it's this simple. For the next 30 days, gift out influence 30 times and watch what happens to your own influence. So like for the next 30 days. Shout people out on Facebook or recommend them on LinkedIn, or if you've got a newsletter, mention them in your newsletter and watch what starts happening to your own influence level at the end of 30 days. I think you'll be astounded as to where you're at and what's coming back to you.
Wow. Influence is energy, and the more we channel it, the more we get, right?
Brilliant. Yeah, that I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah.
So that is an awesome challenge. I'm actually going to try to take on that challenge myself.
I love it.
Are there any other really big mistakes that people make? The premature ask. I remember what you mentioned that the first time I met you. You were giving a talk with another friend of mine, Karen McGregor. She organized Colin Sprake.
Yeah, speaking at the Rock the Stage event. That's
yeah,
right. That's
yes.
When we first met. Yeah.
And she had another. I became friends with Satien at that same talk. I wound up sitting next to him, and that was like the one of the coolest things.
I love how you're effortlessly giving influence to all these people right now. I just want to point that out and shine a light on it, right? Because Karen McGregor does awesome events with Rock the Stage in Vancouver. You know, Colin Sprake, who runs Make Your Mark Training, trains entrepreneurs actually all over North America, but his company is centered in Vancouver, so they do huge events in Vancouver. Same with Satyen Raja. Amazing international speaker, also based in Vancouver. So some really awesome people. And I love how basically, I just want to point out your gifting influence in this moment, and it really is that easy when you just acknowledge people who deserve it.
Yeah, the thing about all those people that they have in common, you also have this in common, is the advice can be taken by anyone. You don't have to be building a business. You just
it really does apply to everyone, you know. Yeah. And I think, you know, really the biggest mistake I would see people make is what I would call practicing at business or practicing at life, you know. And it's the equivalent of, you might call it playing small, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you catch yourself saying things like, someday when I'm really good at XYZ, then I'll do my big dream, you know, then I'll start that charity, then I'll go for that big promotion, then I'll really create change in my organization, or whatever it might be that your heart is really wanting you to go after, you know. And that's that inner dialogue getting in the way again, right? And, you know, if you look at the most influential people, one of the things that they all have in common is they're of high, high service to the world. They stand in really big problems, and they stand for the solution of that problem in very specific ways. You know, like, think about what it would take for a 28-year-old fresh out of Bible college to become globally iconic. You know, and of course I'm talking about Martin Luther King Jr., right?
Right.
But he stood in the biggest problem going on the planet at the time, which was racial equality and how we treat each other with respect on this planet. But he did it in a very specific way. You know, he took on the Montgomery, Alabama bus system, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget to think about that. I mean, most people know it, but they forget to think of the significance of that, that he became globally iconic inside of a small local issue, right? And the more real and tangible, the more grassroots the issue you go after, in fact, the easier it is to become influential. You know, I love that Margaret Mead quote, right? Never believe that a few caring people can't change the world, for indeed that's all that whoever will, right? It's one of my favorite quotes because it is so true inside the influence game. When you take on what's right in front of you, small, local, in your business, in your organization, in your community, whatever it might be, growing influence is faster and easier. Like, actually, there's a real-time example going on right now. Do you mind if I give you another example of that?
Sure.
You know, I'd love to tell you about Judy Van Niekerk. And Judy, I am going to predict that Judy will be huge in the next few months because, and, you know, she already is beloved and well-known in the UK and Europe as, you know, someone who is a leader in the transformational movement. And, you know, if you'd followed Judy Van Niekerk's story, she's the survivor of one of the most horrific incest stories you'll ever hear. Her father actually kept her prisoner for the first, you know, 12 to 15 years of her life. I can't remember how long. And, you know, not only did she get herself out of that situation and reported her father, but she eventually got to the place where she could forgive him. And her story has been covered all over media, all throughout, you know, UK and English-speaking Europe. And, you know, so as a leader in the empowerment movement who really invests in women and women's empowerment, one of the things that really drives Judy crazy is that women think it's okay to hurt themselves in the name of being feminine, in the name of fashion. You know, we wear shoes that hurt, we wear bras that hurt. In fact, when we look at the problem of women's bras, like a lot of leading cancer experts say they're very concerned with push-up bras and things like that as being a contributor to breast cancer. And in fact, talk to any chiropractor and they'll tell you that poorly fitting bras can cause all kinds of major back issues, right? And so here we are buying a fashion item that causes us pain, right? And I remember when Judy was first talking to me about this, she had to disrupt my thinking on it, right? Because I'm like, are you kidding me? Give up my push-up bra? No. But what Judy has created is a product called the Digital Bra. It's actually an app you can download on your smartphone. And you would, you know, women would scan their bodies in the privacy of their own home, and it's securely uploaded to the site. and you can purchase a custom ordered bra that's made to measure. How cool is that? And so they're just in the process of launching a big Kickstarter campaign around this. And I predict that this is going to go wildly viral because Judy is firmly standing in the problem of disrupting the thinking of women, disrupting the thinking that it's okay for us to teach our daughters and teach the next generation that it's fine to hurt our bodies and hurt ourselves in the name of being sexy. Right? And change that to, no, sexy doesn't have to hurt. Sexy can be beautiful and awesome and fit properly and be great, right? But she's disrupting that thinking in a really specific way by launching a product that solves that problem. Now, in my world, that's super cool, and I would predict massive success for what Judy's doing.
It is very super cool. We had her on the show like 3 or 4 episodes ago.
Oh, fun. Yeah. So you know Judy. Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about her product.
Shoes, Michael, I would just say I can't wait for her to do the digital shoe.
As long as the digital shoe has some platform, some heel, you know.
It's bright red. I just got bright red.
That's right. You are a red shoe person.
I know. We share that in common. Yes. Spirit.
So, yeah. So, because we're starting to run out of time here, back to your book. What is the best way people can find your book when it's released? And that's October 1st, right? It's released, is that right?
Yeah, the release date is October 1st. It's already available for pre-order on Amazon. So if you want all the information, you can just go to our book website. It's called massinfluencethebook.com. Or you can look us up on Amazon. It's called Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential. And the book actually includes the 30-day program that I mentioned earlier. If you need a little bit of help in doing your 30-day challenge, it's only $8.87 to buy the book. We priced it rock bottom because it's way more important to me that this.
Okay, so that was the talk I had with Teresa de Groba. And we're basically talking about her book also and what she does for people. So that's basically the show for today. I am going to get my TransLink grape out there. On Sunday, I was going to an event that actually my video production team was sponsoring. And when I got to the Bridgeport station on the Canada line, because of the sun run, there was a lineup that was probably about, let's put it this way, the Bridgeport, as you know, if you take the Canada line, you know that it goes by the River Rock Casino, and you have access to the SkyTrain platform from the River Rock Casino. Well, it was back into, the lineup was all the way back through the bridge to the casino and into their parking lot over there. It was actually wrapped around the into the parking lot. So everybody was there trying to get their compass fare to get on the Canada line. And I just think that's a bit crazy. It should have been better organized so that people just flowed through and got to where they were going. So I did tweet this to TransLink, and they gave me the company line of, well, if everybody was just to buy a compass card, there would never be any tie-ups at all. So to TransLink, I think that if you keep that in mind and don't try to fix what happened, truly fix it other than with your compass card, I think you're going to start driving ridership away from you, and then we'll have more cars on the street. That's not exactly what we want at this time. So to TransLink, rethink your plan and your system. Okay, so that's it for me today. I will see you tomorrow on our half hour show, so at 2 o'clock tomorrow. So see you later. Bye.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is